Chapter 30. Jasper knew that they had been seen, but she was by no means certain that Heemskerk would tell her father, and at any rate not that evening. She concluded rapidly that the safest thing would be to get Jasper out of the way as soon as possible. "What has he been doing?" asked Jasper in a calm undertone.
"Oh, nothing. Nothing. He sits there looking cross. But you know how he's always worrying Papa.
Your father's quite unreasonable," pronounced Jasper judicially.
"I don't know," she said in a doubtful tone. Something of old Nelson's dread of the authorities had rubbed off on the girl since he had to live with it day after day.
"Don't know. Papa's afraid of being reduced to beggary, as he says, in his old days.
Look here, kid, you had better clear out tomorrow, first thing."
Jasper had hoped for another afternoon with Freya, an afternoon of quiet felicity with the girl by his side, and his eyes on his brig, anticipating a blissful future. His silence was eloquent with disappointment, and Freya understood it very well. She, too, was disappointed. But it was her business to be sensible. "We shan't have a moment to ourselves with that beetle creeping round the house," she argued in a low, hurried voice.
"Oh, what's the good of your staying? And he won't go while the brig's here.
You know he won't. He ought to be reported for loitering," murmured Jasper with a vexed little laugh.
"Mind you get underway at daylight," recommended Freya under her breath.
He detained her after the manner of lovers. She expostulated without struggling, because it was hard for her to repulse him. He whispered into her ear while he put his arms round her.
"Next time we two meet, next time I hold you like this, it shall be on board. You and I, in the brig all the world, all the life," and then he flashed out.
"Wonder I can wait. I feel as if I must carry you off now, at once. I could run with you in my hands down the path without stumbling, without touching the earth." She was still. She listened to the passion in his voice. She was saying to herself that, if she were to whisper the faintest yes, if she were but to sigh lightly her consent, he would do it. He was capable of doing it without touching the earth. She closed her eyes and smiled in the dark, abandoning herself in a delightful giddiness, for an instant, to his encircling arm. But before he could be tempted to tighten his grasp, she was out of it, a foot away from him, and in full possession of herself. That was the steady Freya. She was touched by the deep sigh which floated up to her from the white figure of Jasper, who did not stir.
"You are a mad kid," she said tremulously.
Then with a change of tone, "Oh, one could carry me off. Not even you. I am not the sort of girl that gets carried off." His white form seemed to shrink a little before the force of that assertion, and she relented.
"SN'T is enough for you to know that you have carried me away," she added in a tender tone.
He murmured an endearing word, and she continued.
"I've promised you, I've said I would come, and I shall come of my own free will. You shall wait for me on board. I shall get up the side by myself, and walk up to you on the deck and say, 'Here I am, kid.'"
And then I shall be carried off. But it will be no man who will carry me off, it will be the brig, your brig, our brig. ...
I love the beauty."
She heard an inarticulate sound, something like a moan wrung out by pain or delight, and glided away. There was that other man on the other veranda, that dark, surly Dutchman who could make trouble between Jasper and her father, bring about a quarrel, ugly words, and perhaps a physical collision. What a horrible situation! But, even putting aside that awful extremity, she shrank from having to live for some 3 months with a wretched, tormented, angry, distracted, absurd man. And when the day came, the day and the hour, what should she do if her father tried to detain her by main force, as was, after all, possible? Could she actually struggle with him hand to hand? But it was of lamentations and entreaties that she was really afraid. Could she withstand them? What an odious, cruel, ridiculous position would that be? But it won't be.
he'll say nothing, she thought as she came out quickly on the west veranda, and, seeing that Team's skirt did not move, sat down on a chair near the doorway, and kept her eyes on him. The outraged lieutenant had not changed his attitude. Only his cap had fallen off his stomach, and was lying on the floor. His thick black eyebrows were knitted by a frown, while he looked at her out of the corners of his eyes. And their sideways glance in conjunction with the hooked nose, the whole bulky, ungainly, sprawling person, struck Freya as so comically moody that, inwardly discomposed as she could not help smiling. She did her best to give that smile a conciliatory character. She did not want to provoke Heemskirk needlessly. And the lieutenant, perceiving that smile, was mollified. It never entered his head that his outward appearance, a naval officer in uniform, could appear ridiculous to that girl of no position, the daughter of old Nielsen. The recollection of her arms round Jasper's neck still irritated and excited him. "He hussy," he thought. "Smiling, eh? That's how you are amusing yourself. Fooling your father finally, aren't you? You have a taste for that sort of fun, have you? Well, we shall see." He did not alter his position, but on his pursed up lips there also appeared a smile of surly and ill-omened amusement, while his eyes returned to the contemplation of his boots. Freya felt hot with indignation. She sat radiantly fair in the lamplight, her strong, well-shaped hands lying one on top of the other in her lap. "That odious creature," she thought. Her face colored with sudden anger. "You have scared my maid out of her senses," she said aloud. "Hat possessed you?" He was thinking so deeply of her that the sound of her voice, pronouncing these unexpected words, startled him extremely. He jerked up his head and looked so bewildered that Freya insisted impatiently. "I mean Antonia. You have bruised her arm. What did you do it for?" "Do you want to quarrel with me?" he asked thickly, with a sort of amazement. He blinked like an owl. He was funny. Freya, like all women, had a keen sense of the ridiculous in outward appearance. "Well, no, I don't think I do." She could not help herself. She laughed outright, a clear, nervous laugh in which Heemskirk joined suddenly with a harsh "ha, ha." Voices and footsteps were heard in the passage, and Jasper, with old Nelson, came out. Old Nelson looked at his daughter approvingly, for he liked the lieutenant to be kept in good humor, and he also joined sympathetically in the laugh. "Ah, Lieutenant, we shall have some dinner," he said, rubbing his hands cheerily. Jasper had gone straight to the balustrade. The sky was full of stars, and in the blue velvety night the cove below had a denser blackness, in which the riding lights of the brig and of the gunboat glimmered redly, like suspended sparks. "Next time this riding light glimmers down there, I'll be waiting for her on the quarter deck to come and say 'here I am,'" Jasper thought, and his heart seemed to grow bigger in his chest, dilated by an oppressive happiness that nearly wrung out a cry from him. There was no wind. Not a leaf below him stirred, and even the sea was but a still uncomplaining shadow. Far away on the unclouded sky the pale lightning, the heat lightning of the tropics, played tremulously amongst the low stars in short, faint, mysteriously consecutive flashes, like incomprehensible signals from some distant planet. The dinner passed off quietly. Freya sat facing her father, calm but pale. Heemskirk affected to talk only to old Nelson. Jasper's behavior was exemplary. He kept his eyes under control, basking in the sense of Freya's nearness, as people bask in the sun without looking up to heaven. And very soon after dinner was over, mindful of his instructions, he declared that it was time for him to go on board his ship. Heemskirk did not look up. Ensconced in the rocking chair, and puffing at a cheroot, he had the air of meditating surlily over some odious outbreak. So at least it seemed to Freya. Old Nelson said at once, "L.L. stroll down with you." He had begun a professional conversation about the dangers of the New Guinea coast, and wanted to relate to Jasper some experience of his own over there. Jasper was such a good listener. Freya made as if to accompany them, but her father frowned, shook his head, and nodded significantly towards the immovable Heemskerk blotting out smoke with half-closed eyes and protruded lips. The lieutenant must not be left alone. Take offense, perhaps. Freya obeyed these signs. Perhaps it is better for me to stay, she thought. Women are not generally prone to review their own conduct, still less to condemn it. The embarrassing masculine absurdities are in the main responsible for its ethics. But, looking at Heemskerk, Freya felt regret and even remorse. His thick bulk in repose suggested the idea of repletion, but as a matter of fact he had eaten very little. He had drunk a great deal, however. The fleshy lobes of his unpleasant big ears with deeply folded rims were crimson. They quite flamed in the neighborhood of the flat, sallow cheeks. For a considerable time he did not raise his heavy brown eyelids. To be at the mercy of such a creature was humiliating, and Freya, who always ended by being frank with herself, thought regretfully, "If only I had been open with Papa from the first. But then what an impossible life he would have led me." Yes. Men were absurd in many ways. Lovably like Jasper, impracticably like her father, odiously like that grotesquely supine creature in the chair. Was it possible to talk him over? Perhaps it was not necessary? I can't talk to him, she thought. And when Heemskerk, still without looking at her, began resolutely to crush his half-smoked cheroot on the coffee tray, she took alarm, glided towards the piano, opened it in tremendous haste, and struck the keys, before she sat down. In an instant the veranda, the whole carpetless wooden bungalow raised on piles, became filled with an uproarious, confused resonance. But through it all she heard, she felt on the floor the heavy, prowling footsteps of the lieutenant moving to and fro at her back. He was not exactly drunk, but he was sufficiently primed to make the suggestions of his excited imagination seem perfectly feasible and even clever, beautifully, unscrupulously clever. Freya, aware that he had stopped just behind her, went on playing without turning her head. She played with spirit, brilliantly, a fierce piece of music, but when his voice reached her, she went cold all over. It was the voice, not the words. The insolent familiarity of tone dismayed her to such an extent that she could not understand at first what he was saying. His utterance was thick too. I suspected. Of course I suspected something of your little goings-on. I am not a child. But from suspecting to seeing, you understand there's an enormous difference. That sort of thing. Come. One isn't made of stone. And when a man has been worried by a girl as I have been worried by you, Miss Freya sleeping and waking then, of course. But I am a man of the world. It must be dull for you here. I say, won't you leave off this confounded playing? This last was the only sentence really which he made out. She shook her head negatively, and in desperation put on the loud pedal, but she could not make the sound of the piano cover his raised voice. Only, I am surprised that you should. An English trading skipper, a common fellow. Low, cheeky lot, infesting these islands. I would make short work of such trash. While you have here a good friend, a gentleman ready to worship at your feet, your pretty feet, an officer, a man of family. Strange, isn't it? But what of that? You are fit for a prince. Freya did not turn her head. Her face went stiff with horror and indignation. This adventure was altogether beyond her conception of what was possible. It was not in her character to jump up and run away. It seemed to her, too, that if she did move there was no saying what might happen. Presently her father would be back, and then the other would have to leave off. It was best to ignore. She went on playing loudly and correctly, as though she were alone, as if Heemskerk did not exist. That proceeding irritated him. Come. You may deceive your father, he bawled angrily, but I am not to be made a fool of. Stop this infernal noise. Freya. Hey. You Scandinavian goddess of love. Stop. Do you hear? That's what you are of love. But the heathen gods are only devils in disguise, and that's what you are, to a deep little devil. Stop it, I say, or I will lift you off that stool. Standing behind her, he devoured her with his eyes, from the golden crown of her rigidly motionless head to the heels of her shoes, the line of her shapely shoulders, the curves of her fine figure swaying a little before the keyboard. As he had on a light dress, the sleeves stopped short at the elbows, in an edging of lace. A satin ribbon encircled her waist. In an access of irresistible reckless hopefulness he clapped both his hands on that waist, and then the irritating music stopped at last. But, quick as she was in springing away from the contact, the round music stool going over with a crash, Heemskirk's lips, aiming at her neck, landed a hungry, smacking kiss just under her ear. A deep silence reigned for a time, and then he laughed rather feebly. He was disconcerted somewhat by her white, still face, the big light violet eyes resting on him stonily, as he had not uttered a sound. She faced him, steadying herself on the corner of the piano with one extended hand. The other went on rubbing with mechanical persistency the place his lips had touched. "What's the trouble?" he said, offended. "Startled you? Look here. Don't let us have any of that nonsense. You don't mean to say a kiss frightens you, so much as all that. I know better. I don't mean to be left out in the cold." He had been gazing into her face with such strained intentness that he could no longer see it distinctly. Everything round him was rather misty. He forgot the overturned stool, caught his foot against it, and lurched forward slightly, saying in an ingratiating tone, "I'm not bad fun, really. You try a few kisses, to begin with." He said no more, because his head received a terrific concussion, accompanied by an explosive sound. Freya had swung around, strong arm with such force, that the impact of her open palm on his flat cheek turned him half round. Uttering a faint, hoarse yell, the lieutenant clapped both his hands to the left side of his face, which had taken on suddenly a dusky brick-red tinge. Freya, very erect, her violet eyes darkened, her palm still tingling from the blow, a sort of restrained, determined smile showing a tiny gleam of her white teeth, heard her father's rapid, heavy tread on the path below the veranda. Her expression lost its pugnacity, and became sincerely concerned. She was sorry for her father. She stooped quickly to pick up the music stool, as if anxious to obliterate the traces. But that was no good. As he had resumed her attitude, one hand resting lightly on the piano, before old Nelson got up to the top of the stairs. "Poor father! How furious he will be, how upset! And afterwards, what tremors, what unhappiness! Why had she not been open with him from the first?" His round, innocent stare of amazement cut her to. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.